to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. And guys, I hate to shame you both. All my teams won this weekend. I'm in a good, his Ohio State Buckeyes won. That's great. But my Case Keenum's won, which is a rare feat.
Okay.
The Eagles won. I lost fantasy football, but I always lose fantasy football, so we're good to go. So all in all, it was a great weekend for
me. Jenna.
Thank you.
I'm very happy for
you.
Thanks. Glad you had a good birthday weekend.
He had a great birthday weekend.
Lot to do.
I'm glad your coach, the greatest coach in America, America was able to see him. We couldn't hide him anymore. Jim Harbaugh at University of Michigan, the smartest guy in sports television.
There's a misleading clip of me floating around the internet that my partner, my good friend, well, as some would say, my adopted mentor, Chris Carter, is sharing.
It's adopted because I told you I'm mentoring you. You always tell me, I watch you on TV, you're like, hey, mentored by Colin Cowherd. This guy's made the greatest contribution in my life. He don't know your kid's name.
Okay. All right, let's start with the late game last night. Aaron Rodgers trying to get the Packers into the playoff picture, taking on Kirk Cousins and the Vikings. Second quarter, Vikings trailing. Cousins finds Stephon Diggs, and we are tied at 14. We got a ball game. End of the third now, Cousins. This time to Adam Thielen. Feeling in for the touchdown, Vikings extend the lead 24-14. Less than 3 minutes to go, Packers still down 10. Rodgers cannot connect with Davante Adams in the end zone, and the Packers lose the game. 24-17 was your final. They fall to 4-6-1. Vikings take the win. Here's their quarterback, Kirk Cousins, on defeating Aaron Rodgers.
Well, last week left a bad taste in our mouths, and the chance to come back on Sunday Night Football against a division rival at home was a great opportunity, and I'm glad we made the most of it. It took, you know, a great team effort, a lot of people involved to make that happen, and I'm thrilled with the outcome.
Well, I mean, we are where we're at right now, record-wise. We're going to need some help from some teams, and then we got to take care of our own business. You know, we're going to have to find a way to win a game on the road. We're 0-6 on the road, so we just got to go back home, get some rest, beat Arizona, and then come back and beat Atlanta and go to Chicago, a place we've won a number of times, beat them, go to New York around Christmas, beat them, and come home against Detroit, beat them, get a little help.
But that's it. Only these seven things and then nothing else and then the eight thing. That's it. All right, so if we take a step back for just a second, see, who do you blame for the Packers? I call it a very disappointing season.
Well, I don't think that I'm just going to point specifically at one aspect. I think that, like a number of teams, but the Packers in particular, I think them in New England, when you look at the new rules that are really helping out a lot of quarterbacks play at a higher level than we're used to seeing, what we're seeing is we're seeing other teams, their quarterbacks can play to the level that the Packers and the Patriots are used to seeing only their quarterbacks play at. Because of the rules and because they become easier to be able to throw the ball, teams' quarterbacks are far more effective. Now, I think teams will adjust this offseason, but I think that part right there, we could talk about the personnel moves, the new general managers, new coaches. We can do that. But for me, I think that's one aspect that was miscalculated because we didn't know the numbers were going to jump as high, and we didn't think our best two quarterbacks in Aaron and Tom Brady that the pack would be so close to them. Like, why wouldn't they benefit from these rules? I can't explain that, but in looking at today's game, these other quarterbacks are able to get closer. They're able to be more effective passing the ball. Other teams are. So then you can get off into the other things. How talented are the Packers? They're not that much more talented. They still have not established a running game through the years. Their defense still has questions on the road. Clay Matthews, how much more football does he have in him? So there's a number of things that people will blame. But I'm just saying, I think the Packers miscalculated because now being able to generate a passing game is a lot easier, and Aaron Rodgers has not benefited from it, and Tom Brady have not benefited from it.
So that's a really interesting point, that the new rules made a lot of quarterbacks that were 60% of Rodgers, now 80% of Rodgers. Are they going to make Rodgers 20% better? Like, They have Drew Brees. Like, Drew Brees is one of, on that top tier quarterback.
Yes.
Like, they
Phillip
have
Rivers.
Phillip Rivers. You took the words out of my mouth. That's a perfect point, Jenna. Like, they for Brady, I can understand it. I think it's personnel and age. I think you are seeing Brady, even though he's held off Father Time better than any quarterback ever, doesn't mean Father Time's not gaining any ground on him. Mm-hmm. With Rodgers, it's a little more perplexing. But watching last night, I saw something that I've seen repeatedly this year, which is, I know he missed that pass to Davante Adams when they were down 10, but that pass notwithstanding, Rodgers early in games, instead of trying to pick up the easy first down, is going for kill shots. Kill shots that wouldn't even be kill shots, just like big plays. There are multiple times in yesterday's game where they had third and manageable, and Rodgers is throwing the ball, taking a shot downfield. And that speaks to me, yes, a guy that has an enormous faith in his ability, but also a guy that maybe doesn't have as much faith or in the ability of everyone around him, the coaching staff and the players, and feels like, I've got to do it all. I've got to do it myself. What did he say last week? I have to play a near perfect game for us to win. And yesterday,
and that was alarming when he said that.
Yep.
Because I just haven't heard players or never heard a coach tell players that they had to play perfect games.
And yesterday, he was far from it. I mean, 198 yards, a 94 rating, one touchdown, no picks. In the 2018 NFL, is like a C-minus game. That's a below league average game when he had to play well. But the bigger worry for me, Jen, about the Packers is, this is the third straight year that through 11 games, they have six losses. Third straight year that through 11 games, they have six losses and below 500. Now, last year, we know what happened. Rodgers broke his collarbone. But the year before that, he was healthy. This year, I know he got hurt in the first week, but he's played every game. This is a systemic issue from the head coach, and I am going to mention the personnel. See, I couldn't help but hear them talking about all the young guys they have playing in the secondary last night and not think about, even if Ha-Ha Clinton Dix wasn't playing great, he'd be better than a guy who was a converted corner to safety, who was a reserve. Like, so there's systemic issues, and Rodgers needs to play perfect, and I would argue he is right now having the worst year he's had in 5 or 6 years.
Well, before we get to the Vikings, there was something they mentioned during the broadcast last night, maybe it was before, that this Packers offense just looks stale. Like, if you look at all the other offenses they have developed and they have kept up with all the rest of the league, and this Packers offense looks exactly like it did in like 1987. Now, it's not the old school coach. Bill Belichick changes with the time, changes with their opponent, and the Packers don't seem to do that, and you have this great quarterback and you're not doing anything with it other than your standard go out there and do what has worked in the past.
Yeah. I think that's an amazing question. That's something I never ever looked at. Even Sean Payton, I look at what he's doing. It's totally different than what he was doing 5 years ago. And to look at some of the other coaches as far as Belichick, because I think that that's one of the things that's led to his greatness. Yeah, those first three Super Bowls with Tom Brady, ball control, defensive oriented, but the last two and the other couple appearances, explosive offenses, tricky place, not gimmicky, but new type of wrinkles from college or other teams. You're right. We don't see that in Green Bay. That's something that we need to, but that's also maybe the arrogance of the head coach and not looking for new wrinkles for Aaron Rodgers every year to enhance his overall ability. Tremendous question. I had never, ever thought about that. I've looked at other teams, and because I said that about Dallas.
Yeah.
Oh, Dallas, they don't come up with any wrinkles. But Green Bay, let's put them in that basket. Great observation.
To that point, we talk all the time that this is a copycat league. How many teams have we seen run the Philly special this year? Half dozen?
You know
what I mean? How many times do we see a play that the Chiefs run early in the year that then the Saints or the Rams or a team steals from them?
Sean McVay, he bragged about it.
Yes. And so I'm just curious, how many coaches, offensive coordinators across the league are watching Green Bay and saying, oh, let's take that from them. Oh, I haven't seen that before. Oh, that's an interesting way to get the tight end involved. Whatever it is, you don't see it. I think you crystallized it perfectly, Jenna. It seems like that if you were to just look at the routes guys are running and lay them out on a graph, this year to 2016 to 2014 to 2012 would look very similar. And that what worked then might not work now as the game is evolving, as defenses are evolving.
What you see now is they don't get the yards per catch. So even if we laid that, what they were doing in those years, 15, 16, 17, 18, and we put what they're doing now, the routes might be the same, but we're not seeing the finish at the end of these. We don't see outside of their number one receiver.
Devontae Adams.
We don't see other guys scoring the football the way they used to be able to spread it around. They would normally have four or five guys that have seven touchdowns. Now, basically, Adams is the only guy a threat to be able to score, and the yards after the catch in pro football, it becomes very, very important, and we don't see that.
It might be surprising to some the Packers have lost four or five. I'll tell you one guy that probably wasn't that surprising to. Aaron Rodgers. He told us before the bye, he knew this stretch was coming. He knew they weren't playing at a level that if they stayed at the level they were at going into the bye, they were going to struggle in this five-game stretch.
All right, we'll talk about this from the Vikings' perspective. They're now 6-4-1 with the win last night. Coming up, though, can the Steelers still contend in the AFC after blowing a game in Denver? That's next on First Things First.
We can't. Hey, guys, we'll get right back to the show, but first, I wanted to tell our listeners about HelloFresh. HelloFresh is a meal kit delivery service that shops, plans, and delivers step-by-step recipes and pre-measured ingredients so you can just cook, eat, and enjoy. Why do I recommend HelloFresh? There's something for everyone. Three plans to choose from: classic, veggie, and family. Each box is made up of fresh, responsibly obtained ingredients from carefully selected farms and high-rated, trusted sources. Make family dinners fuss-free with HelloFresh's picky eater, kid-tested, and approved family plan. There are so many delicious options to look forward to. Personally, I can't wait to try the pork carnitas tacos, which are a weeknight-friendly version of carnitas, one that doesn't involve hours of slow cooking. To create it in minimal time, you'll add a spice blend and a bit of stock to make ground pork rich and saucy. That warmly flavored meat is the centerpiece of these tacos, which also come with a solid selection of tasty toppings to choose from. If tacos aren't your thing, HelloFresh has plenty of other dishes, including another delicious dinner I'm looking forward to in the Tuscan chicken linguine with roasted tomato, basil, and a creamy Parmesan sauce. HelloFresh's chefs took pasta night to the next level with this one, thanks to linguine, tomatoes, and chicken with Tuscan herbs. This recipe has all the Italian flair you could want and then some. The dish is accompanied by a sauce that has all the creamy goodness you want. It has cream cheese, Parmesan, a garlic herb butter for a trifecta of dairy deliciousness. Rediscover the excitement of cooking. Look forward to your HelloFresh delivery, knowing dinner just got that much easier. All the ingredients come pre-measured and handy labeled meal kits so you know which ingredients to go with which recipe. You won't spend all night in the kitchen because recipes only take around 30 minutes. There are so many benefits of subscribing so you can keep enjoying HelloFresh week after week. Spend less time meal planning and grocery shopping each week and get that time back to do more of what you love. Get delicious, filling meals delivered right to your door every week for less than $10 per serving and free shipping. So here's how it works. For a total of $60 off, that's $20 off your first three boxes, visit HelloFresh.com/FTF60 and then enter FTF60. Again, for a total of $60 off, $20 off your first three boxes, visit HelloFresh.com/FTF60 and enter FTF60 as the promo code. Visit HelloFresh today.
We're going to get to the Steelers in a second, but first, a couple of big plays from last night. Adam Thielen hauls in a pinpoint pass in double coverage from Kirk Cousins.
A couple observations on this. One, I thought it was getting picked. And two, 5 years ago, that safety blows Thielen up. That's one of the plays they took out of the game smartly. This is an amazing throw and catch.
Great catch. Great catch. Kirk Cousins realizes the DB's on the outside, so he throws the ball on the inside. The only way that the wide receiver is going to be able to catch it. Adam Thielen, spectacular. Another 100-yard game.
Yep, ninth of the year.
All right, the Raiders' Jared Cook with a sensational one-handed grab before falling into the end zone. We don't have many Raiders highlights, so let's savor the ones we do.
I mean, the Raiders looked for a moment there they might pull off the upset. Lamar Jackson and the Ravens were too much, but this was an outstanding catch.
Ravens. Jared Cook's had a very good season. John Gruden, if you look at one player who he has really helped their career, Jared Cook would be the one single one. Oh, he helped out Khalil Mack, letting him go. Oh, he also helped out Amari Cooper, too. But yeah, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Hey, you took my joke. That was awesome. Seattle's Chris Carson is upended by Carolina's Eric Reed. Crazy thing, lands on his feet, keeps running.
See, you've been telling guys stop hurdling.
That is insane.
It's not. If guys, when they do get hit on it, land on their feet and get a couple extra yards, they're never going to stop. That was wild, man.
Amazing.
C's a, no, he's just C's a little distracted right now. He's got Urban Meyer's got no respect for our
guys. Stay on the ground. Stay on the ground, please. And then I'm telling everyone, stay. Someone's going to get flipped. And then this dude's so talented, he lands on his feet.
Yeah. All right, the Browns' Nick Chubb, another real talented guy, comes down with an amazing touchdown grab over the Bengals' D. Look at that.
I couldn't believe this was a catch.
That's amazing.
I couldn't believe it either. Not from a running back.
Around his head, and then to survive the ground, all of it. This was a spectacular catch. Great day by Baker. Great day by the Browns, which I know we'll get into. Hugh Jackson just holding L's left and right.
I know. Current team, former team. Moving on to the Steelers, who face the Broncos in Denver. All right, here we go. Just over a minute left in this one. Big Ben, who had a good late afternoon, throwing for over 450 yards through a costly interception into the end zone. Case Keenum and the Broncos go on to win 24-17. Steelers fall to 7-3-1. Let's talk and hear from Big Ben on that play that sealed the loss.
It's a run-pass option, and once you're late to the handoff, you don't want to kind of force that the play because bad things can happen. And then, you know, I never would have thought in a million years that a defensive lineman would get blocked off the ball that far right into an interception. But good play by him. He got blocked. He got blocked right into the play. So there's no way to ever think that guy's going to make that play. And of all the interceptions I've thrown, that's one of the most fluky I've ever been associated with.
Or in other words, kind of not my fault, but whatever. See, first of all, the face. Second of all, what happened on that last costly interception?
Well, it was a run pass option. You could see the offensive linemen. They're always going to block the run. The thing that I have the biggest problem with is I listen to Ben, all his interviews and everything, and Ben is, every once in a while, he'll get a little whiny on you. Wee, oh, poor me, wee. I've never seen the history of football defensive lineman down the field. If it's a RPO, a true RPO, once you get the bad snap, unless you think you just have superior matchups on the outside, you have to abort the passing part because you're not going to have a good play fake because it's about timing. You want the defense to be able to see the ball, so you want the ball in your hands. You want the defense to see him put it in his belly, a long read to be able to suck up that inside coverage. So a lot of things went wrong here. When it was a bad snap, Ben should have handed the ball off. And even if he did decide, I am going to throw it, he's got to throw this ball about a foot beneath the goalpost. Goalpost is 10 foot. You throw it 9 feet, then a guy like AB, who's 5'10", he can still be able to get to it. So a number of mistakes by Ben Roethlisberger.
Nick, isn't it hard to pull off the RPO that close to the end zone? Isn't your timing off anyway?
Well, I know last week they ran the little option play close to the end zone. I think you can if it's run well, but you're trusting your veteran quarterback to do anything other than this.
Yes.
And by the way, Ben, I understand maybe a little fluky the D lineman gets it. That ball's not getting completed. It's not as if AB was wide open past the D lineman. Roby could have picked it off.
Yeah,
certainly would have knocked
it
down.
Definitely.
And
yes.
So, like, even if the D lineman's not there, what does he see there? Where AB never gets separation from Roby. And like you're saying, his only hope would have been throw it to where it either is going to my guy or out the back of the end zone. Throw it high, right? You throw it high at the back line, low on the front line of the end zone.
Yes, absolutely, yes. And the thing that Ben said, he's right. I've never seen a defensive tackle who was dropping back into coverage. But watch the defensive tackle. He reads Ben's eyes. Once he reads his eyes, he gets real soft, so he's getting ready to jump. Mm-hmm. So when he's getting ready to jump, Pouncey pushes him back into the end zone. So your fake was so bad that the defensive tackle read it.
And by the way, this is something for Big Ben. As great as he is, this is one of his bugaboos, is these interceptions in the end zone. We saw it last week against the Jags when it looked like the Jags were going to win, when the Steelers were being shut out. I think it was 10-0 at that point in time. Jacksonville ended up driving down the field and scoring. Last year, their biggest game of the year, the single biggest play of their season, he throws a pick in the end zone against New England that swung home field in the AFC. And now this game. And the Steelers, this is, they got away with one last week. Talked about how in the last 16 on the road, they were 14-1-1 with no regulation losses. This, it's like they needed to lose a game. Like, because they tried to last week, couldn't. Tried to this week, they found a way to do it. But this is a brutal loss for them, given what they have the rest of the way. Given that they still have the Chargers, they still have the Patriots, they still have the Saints. Like, so you have three of your last five are against three of the five best teams in football.
Teams that are going to have double digits in wins.
Yes.
Like, guaranteed.
And teams that are playing for a lot.
Yes.
Teams that have a ton on the line going into those
games. Wait, hold on. Was this a bad game for the Steelers, or are you both legitimately concerned for their playoff future after seeing what you saw yesterday?
Well, the one thing that's consistent with New England, because this is really more about New England than it is about Pittsburgh. If you want to try to be able to knock New England off, we know you got to get them on the road. And here we are sitting, New England, the number two seed, after 11 weeks. So at 8-3, they have the win over Kansas City. Kansas City slips up. Guess who's going to be the number one seed again?
Well, and even I think Kansas City is going to end up being the one seed. But the Steelers and Pats, it has looked for a while that the 2-3 is going to come down to them. And if the Steelers are finally going to slay that Patriot dragon in the playoffs, it almost has to be in their building. It almost has to be at Pittsburgh with the Patriots having played the week before in the wild card round, a little more beat up than they typically are. And now, even if – here's why that loss is so bad. Even if they beat New England, they are far from a lock for that two seed because they still have the Chargers. They still have the Saints, as we mentioned. This is a game you – and I'll give Denver credit. Denver's got four losses this year to Kansas City, the Rams, and Houston by a combined 16 points.
Yes.
Denver is better than their record suggests. They have played very good teams very well.
Two big wins in a row.
And two great wins in a row the last couple weeks. But the Steelers, teams that are trying to win Super Bowls, and that's all you're going to measure Pittsburgh by, this is a blown opportunity. A blown opportunity because of they had a fumble, the play you hate see, the fumble through the back of the end zone, which is as big of a swing as there is in the NFL. And then at the end, you throw a pick in the end zone on third down. Not on fourth down, third down, knowing you have another shot. It's a killer.
And with Ben Roethlisberger, the last thing Ben talks about, Ben's got to do better in the red zone. You would think who's leading the NFL in red zone interceptions? You think one of these four young quarterbacks or something. Hey, Baker Mayfield, he's probably doing it. What about Josh? No, Ben Roethlisberger. Four red zone picks. That right there is going to change their season. They have been great on the road. We have been bragging about them, but, man, they really let one go. That I believe when we get done with the regular season, they'll look back and have regret for yesterday.
All right, speaking of Ben Roethlisberger, time now for Put a Grade on It, sponsored by CarMax. Big Ben threw for over 450 yards. And a touchdown. He did throw, as we talked about, two interceptions, including the costly one to Shelby Harris that essentially ended the game. All right, CeCe, we just talked about it. Put a grade on Big Ben's day.
I'm going to give him a B-. I'm not into the plus-minus. I'm going to give him B because he was effective throwing the football. But when you turn the ball over late in the game like that, they had a couple other turnovers that hurt them also. But when you turn the ball over, especially in the red zone, 450-yard, man, that's still a very, very good day in the NFL. I'm giving him a B-.
I would give him a C, but I'm downgrading it to a D because of who he lost to and the fact that I now have to listen to Jenna Wolf all week talk about Case Keenum.
You can't
get out-dueled by Case Keenum. You can't throw two picks, including the game-losing interception. D, C. 450 yards. Miss me with that.
Okay.
Those picks killed him.
Okay, here we go.
Mm-hmm. What up,
get
Case?
Get ready for the next subject.
Oh, yeah, here we go.
Coming up is Jim Harbaugh on the hot seat after losing to Ohio State.
Oh, no, don't fire him. I keep trying to tell them, man, please.
Next on First Things First. Friday on Fox, the Pac-12 champion will be crowned as number 17 Utah battles number 16 Washington. And then on Saturday, number 10 Ohio State and 19th ranked Northwestern go toe-to-toe for the Big Ten title. Coverage begins at 7 Eastern, Friday and Saturday on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
When we do this promo later in the week, I'm very curious to see what number is next to Ohio State's name. They're not going to be 10 anymore. Will they be 7? Will they be up to 6? Some voters put them 5. We'll see.
Time for us to go viral. Last night, Dalvin Cook scored his first touchdown of the season. The Vikings broke out, in my opinion, was the celebratory touchdown dance, whatever you will, of the weekend, by far.
Limbo.
Yeah, self-limboing.
Yeah, very creative. I like the fact that Dalvin Cook got it going. Diggs followed up. Then the lineman, I don't know what he was doing. He was trying to limbo, but it
There were some really good ones this weekend. That one, the Allen Iverson step over.
The step over by Lockett
was
extraordinary.
That was a very good one.
That's a really good one.
Seattle, they do a good job every week. They have a number of them. Remember they had the hit batter?
Oh,
they,
Yeah. Listen, next time you're having your powwow over at 345 Park with your buddy Roger, tell him America appreciates the rule change.
Yeah.
This has been one of the cooler things the NFL did, trying to get rid of the no fun league stuff, saying, you know what, celebrate all you want. It's been fun to see.
You guys just told him. He watches the show.
Stories to start your morning sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. We're sticking with the Vikings, who beat the Packers 24-17. Kirk Cousins leading the way with 342 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks. CeCe, how good did Minnesota look in this one?
They look like the Vikings team we were expecting to see before the season. Now, it's hard after last week's game against Chicago, not a performance that they were proud of. But with Dalvin Cook being somewhat healthy, the healthiest he's been this year, we also saw Diggs being healthy. He has been injured the last several weeks. So when they have their core group of special guys on the offense, because that offensive line is still a problem, they can be a special team with Kirk Cousins at the helm.
He was great. Great win for them yesterday. And now the next 2 weeks are going to determine the course of their season. Back-to-back primetime games on the road at New England, at Seattle for Minnesota. They had to get this win because of that schedule coming up. Great job by Kirk Cousins.
What a day for Philip Rivers. Career day, in fact, against the Cardinals. Completed his first 25 passes. That is an NFL record. Finished the day 28 of 29 as the Chargers just routed the Cardinals. See, what'd you make of Rivers' day?
Oh, it's phenomenal. This is not something that you do expect. I'm glad it happened to someone like Philip Rivers. So now we can get more eyes on the Chargers and what they're doing. This could be a special season. Also, we talked about Joey Bosa coming back. If they're able to put some defensive more pressure with performance of someone like Philip Rivers, this could be Philip Rivers' first time leading this team to a Super Bowl.
Rivers was extraordinary, and in a normal year, he'd be an MVP candidate. But dealing with Breeze and Mahomes, he's fallen by the wayside. Costly win, though, for the Los Angeles, as we await to hear the results of Melvin Gordon's injury, because he has been a key part of the offense that has been so good all year long.
Right now, all we know is it's an MCL, right? Moving on to the Colts, they won on a game-winning field goal to beat the Dolphins 27-24. Andrew Luck threw for 343 yards and 3 touchdowns. Nick, how dangerous is this Colts team? You like this team.
1-5 to 6-5, and I think they're going to win this division. I think they are going to catch the Houston Texans, who have a tough Monday night game tonight against Tennessee. This was vintage Andrew Luck. Down 10 in the fourth quarter, no problem. The scramble on 3rd and 9, he ended up throwing it, but the scramble away from pressure.
Yes.
And then the huge throw downfield. It was like when year 3 of Luck, when he seemed to be doing that every single week to somebody. He was outstanding. He got sacked for the first time in a month and a half, but didn't hurt them.
Very impressive what they're doing in Indy. All the eyeballs will be on Luck, but what they've done as far as that offensive line, putting someone in front of them, trying to have a running game. After one more year of free agency and another draft, watch out for the Colts in 2019. Great story this year, but next year, because they got a lot of cap space, they add a player or two, they could be real dangerous. But great for the NFL that Luck is back.
All right, moving on to Baker Mayfield and the Browns taking on the in-state rival Bengals. End of the first, Baker finds Antonio Callaway for the score. Later in the half, Baker finds David Njoku, who somehow, some way, gets into the end zone for a touchdown. And then right before the two-minute warning, Nick Chubb makes the incredible grab to put the Browns up 28. Baker making it look easy yesterday. Browns win 35-20. Watch this. Baker runs into Hugh Jackson after the game. Let's just say they're no longer BFFs. Okay, so here's Baker on that icy exchange.
He said, good job, good game. Yeah, that was brief. I didn't feel like talking.
You or him?
Me.
Why not?
I don't know. Left Cleveland, goes down to Cincinnati. I don't know. It's just somebody that was in our locker room asking for us to play for him and then goes to a different team. We play twice a year. Everybody can have their spin on it, but that's how I feel. No, what it comes down to is we still have the same players. That's what I said when everything was happening. We just had to play better. You know what? You can put your own spin on it, but we have the same players. Yeah, we have people that we believe in calling the plays now.
Okay, just for the record, Hugh Jackson was fired, right? He didn't leave on his own to say, I think I'd rather go to Cincinnati and then try it. Okay, I just want to make sure that, I don't know if Baker knew that, so now I'm telling you. What did you make of Baker's performance yesterday, CeCe?
I thought Baker was very good, especially in the first half. I think the variety for which they're trying to do things, if you look at Baker with Hugh Jackson and that staff, and since he's been gone, they've done a number of things very well as far as get Chubb involved, the other rookie from University of Georgia as a running and get a running game, and also Baker's getting the ball out of his hand quicker from a time standpoint. He's got the ball in his hand less. So you start to see him grow from some of the mistakes he made earlier in the season. It's easy to me that this kid is going to be a star in the league. I didn't have a problem with how he represented the Browns yesterday afterwards as far as Q trying to shake his hands and everything. I'm done with you. Like, you're going on, you're doing something, and I'm trying to lead my team to victory. So all that trying to be icy after the game and everything, yeah, that's the way he should have been. That's exactly the way. So I like what Baker Mayfield has done. He had a chance, too, to level off as a player because he came off hot. Then he got some cold, so people would start to, you know, criticize him. But now you can start to see he's really learned from being in the league for a half a season. Looking forward to seeing how he's going to grow his game.
And we're seeing what a missed opportunity, and by the way, I would have done the same thing, but what a potential missed opportunity the Browns had in the first few weeks by not starting Baker in week one. The missed opportunity they had until they got rid of Hugh and Todd Haley, because the offense has opened up immeasurably since those two have been out of the building. And the Browns got to be sitting there thinking, that Raider game with that changed spot, like just one. It 4-6-1, but if we're 5-5-1, we're a half game out of the playoffs right now. Like, but the most important part is what C said about Baker, that he has at every benchmark looked like the number one overall pick, looked like the guy who was the best player in this draft class, the guy that you would want to, in a draft with five quarterbacks, stake your franchise on to take number one. I watched these other rookie quarterbacks, and they all, while showing flashes, look like rookie quarterbacks. Baker will go quarters at a time and not look like a rookie quarterback. Like, the other young guys, to me, are showing flashes of brilliance and sustained periods of struggles. Baker's more showing flashes of struggles and sustained periods of really good play.
Yeah, none of the other rookie quarterbacks can have the variety of throws. When you watch Baker's highlights, watch sometime. He puts a little loft on it, the ball to Chubb. Chubb's in man-to-man. He knows he's a running back. You can't throw him a hot heater, a low one. Running backs, they don't catch those balls. So he throws it with a little arc on it. You see this? The defender's coming around. The defender can't see it. He puts just enough arc on it so he can make the play. Down the field in the red zone, he drives the ball deep, 25 to 30 yards, down through between the hash marks. So I see different things with him. I don't see this with the other guys. Also, I do not see a young player who's timid in the pocket. And even though he's taken some big licks, he's made some bad decisions, man, he has adjusted to the speed of the game in the NFL. And he is clearly the best of all the quarterbacks by leaps and bounds. We said earlier when they fired the coach, what do you guys want to see? Survive. And, man, he's surviving and really doing well with Kitchens calling the plays.
And he's doing it without a real number one receiver. Because Jarvis Landry, especially after those first few weeks, has been nothing like what they thought he was going to be coming from Miami. He's been more like the guy a lot of people who watched in Miami thought he was, which was a volume receiver as opposed to a big play receiver. Another Jarvis, 3 catches, 30 yards, been par for the course last few months. He's making work with Callaway and Njoku, Chubb. He's been great.
All right, let's look back to the most anticipated, most hyped college football game of the season. You know, the one where Ohio State destroyed Michigan 62-39. Buckeyes quarterback Dwayne Haskins threw for nearly 400 yards and 6 touchdown passes. It's easy to win when you do that, as Jim Harbaugh remains winless in his 4 games against Ohio State. Buckeyes will now face Northwestern in the Big Ten Championship on Fox on Saturday night. All right, CeCe, I don't know if you caught this game. What was the key to OSU's route?
Well, for one, Ohio State hadn't played that type of complete game all season. And Dwayne Haskins' ability going against the number one defense in the country to be dominant early. And typically when you see in a game like this rivalry game where one team gets off to a hot, hot start, you see the coaches get real conservative and dial back the aggressiveness as far as what they're going to do offensively. Urban Meyer and his staff, Ryan Day, they did a tremendous job. No, they were trying to gut Michigan the whole way. So I got to give credit to them as far as how aggressive they were in the game plan. And I got to tell you, I talked to Urban Meyer on Friday. He was very, very confident in how he thought the team was going to play in the game plan that they had put together. Now, no one in these rivalry games thinks it's going to be as lopsided as this game was, but their game planning offensively and how they dismantled that top defense, realizing that we still have substantially better athletes at Ohio State than they do at Michigan, and that's what you are able to see in this game. Pass protection, phenomenal. That great defensive line of Michigan did not able, weren't able to get to Haskins throughout the game. So brilliant job by Ryan Day, Urban Meyer in what this in a rivalry game that was a mismatch.
In this game specifically, tremendous credit for Ohio State at sustaining the body blow that happened near the end of the first half. Michigan scores. They then a half that Ohio State has dominated. There's then a mishap on the kickoff. Michigan scores again. And all of a sudden, it's 21-19. Ohio State stops them on the two-point conversion, then drives the field, gets a field goal of their own, ends up only being a three-point swing instead of a potential six, seven, or eight-point swing. And then the second half, just blew the doors off of them. This was, like you said, the best game Ohio State's played all year, and defensively, the worst game Michigan's played by an enormous margin. But I want to talk about Urban Meyer just for a second, because there's obviously been a lot of reports about the cyst he's dealing with. We don't know how much longer he's going to coach. What he's done at Ohio State in these 7 years is nothing short of remarkable. I understand he won two championships with Florida and only has one with Ohio State. But here's what he's done. 12-0, 12-2, 14-1, 12-1, 11-2, 12-2, 11-1. He is 77-7 in the regular season at Ohio State, 84-9 overall. That's impossible. What's the worst year? The 11-2 season?
Yes.
Like, that's the worst year. The first year there, they're undefeated, but they're not eligible for any bowls or any non-con stuff or any
postseason. And he took over a 6-5 team.
Right. Never lost to Michigan. He has beaten, how about this? He has as many wins against Michigan as he has regular season losses.
Wow.
It's not what he's doing, and he's not doing it in some, he's not doing the ACC where there might be a couple teams a year. He's doing it arguably the toughest division, forget conference, in college football with the teams he has to play every week.
All right, let's jump ahead. If they can beat Northwestern, what do you think the Buckeyes' chances of getting to the playoffs are?
They need some help. I don't think they're going to get in. Anytime you look at it, it's no different than last year on the road to Iowa. If I know how strong our roster is top to bottom. There's no way you should lose the last 2 years at Iowa by that margin this year at Purdue by 29 points. When you do that, you are at the mercy of whatever the committee is going to decide. I do believe that they'll get through, be Big Ten champ, have one loss. Typically, in years like that, they would get in. But you can't lose to a team like that by that margin and expect the committee to give you some type of
The tiebreaker won't go to you.
No.
There won't get any. Listen, if Alabama beats Georgia, as they're favored to do, and then Texas beats Oklahoma, then Ohio State goes. Where it gets complicated is if Alabama beats Georgia, but Oklahoma wins and Ohio State wins. Right now, it looks like Oklahoma would be in the driver's seat in that scenario.
All right, let's move the other side with Michigan. What did that loss say about Jim Harbaugh next?
Well, I know this. It was the absolute worst-case scenario. It all but erases all the progress they made this year. To have their season start with an underwhelming performance against a Notre Dame team that we now know is a very good team, and then have it essentially end, they'll play in a bowl game, of course, but essentially end not just by losing to your rival in a game you're favored in a game that if you win, you're going to the college football playoff, but to be annihilated. Michigan football has now allowed more points this year in a game than Michigan basketball has. Like, you can't have 60 hung on you, and it could have been 70 hung on you in your rivalry game when this is your best team. All my buts for Harbaugh got removed in this game as far as it is his own players. It is his own quarterback. It is a game where you could say the talent should have been relatively equal. And they clearly saw something on film, see, about this number one defense in America that they could exploit, and they exploited it, I mean, all afternoon long.
Yeah, I don't know if this says anything about Harbaugh. To me, I have the same opinion before the game as after the game. All right? The best thing about Michigan happens to be their defense. People are consumed with Jim Harbaugh saying, the best part about Michigan, Jim Harbaugh came back. No, it's not. If you look at since he's been there, the most outstanding part of that defense, of the team, has been the defense. So, yes, if you were talking about the defense, yes, man, their defense has improved. The only way you're going to be able to win a championship is to have a type of defense like that. But Harbaugh, since he went a number of years ago, I think it was like 8 years ago, when he decided to go to University of Nevada and to be able to look at the pistol offense and look at this new creative offense that he wanted to run with Colin Kaepernick, who happened to be a young quarterback there. Since then, he has done nothing offensively that is innovative. You talk about Aaron Rodgers, Mike McCarthy, you look at Harbaugh. What has he done as an offensive coach, as an NFL quarterback? Y'all tell me one thing that he has done is offensive innovation. Tell me one time when Michigan ran a play and you're like, whoa, that was a good play there. You know what Ohio State did at the goal line with Ryan Day? They got a quarterback who can't run. They ran the option. You know what they did after they started doing shallow crosses? We call that bomber formation, which I told Urban I was going to punch him in the face. If we didn't run a lot of bomber formation, at halftime they started trying to switch it. The DB would take the crossing route, so we do this thing called plane. You act like you're going over bomber, then you return the other way. That's what we started
answer for that.
Yeah, and Urban Meyer is not an offensive coach. But when I told him these things on Friday, he was open in his mind saying, you know something? Man, we're going to do some of those things. Harbaugh, y'all tell me one thing. I'm open to it. I'm open to innovative new things. Tell me one thing that Harbaugh has done. Tell me one quarterback that he's developed. Tell me one offensive player at Michigan that's been outstanding in 4 years. Tell me.
Well, and what's so disappointing about that is what he did with Cap and taking what they did at Nevada, putting it into the NFL, that was innovative. That was cutting edge at the time. And he had enormous success from it. But since then, listen, you got to adjust opinions as facts change. I thought you were going to have to adjust yours after this past weekend. I thought Michigan was going to win, and you weren't going
to. I didn't have to adjust my opinion. I thought this is not a great Ohio State team. Michigan should be able to beat this
right.
team. That offensive line Ohio State got, it is not top-notch. That defense, it stinks. It stunk for 4 weeks in a row. They couldn't stop Maryland. How many points did they give up to Purdue?
Right.
So my opinion of Ohio State was real. I know Harbaugh is overrated. Let's just say that. Harbaugh's overrated. That was my opinion before the game, and now here we are on Monday. My opinion ain't changed.
Well, the game worked. The game went to validate your opinion further.
All right, let's
go. I know something about football.
Coming up.
Surprise.
Good. The road to the Super Bowl once again goes through Foxborough. That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, former head coach Eric Mangini joins the show. Always a good time when you're here, Coach.
Thank you.
Private coach. Jokes, not so private jokes, whatever. Just jokes.
Just jokes.
Jokes on jokes.
We got them all.
Chili just tried to slip one in there on that.
Let's talk some Patriots. The Pats coming off their bye week, taking on the Jets. This game perhaps a little closer than the Pats would have wanted. Still, they get the win, 27-13. Tom Brady, 300 yards, 2 touchdowns. He broke the record for most total passing yards. No big whoop. Mm-hmm. Gronk was back, had his first touchdown since week one. Sony Michel added over 130 yards on the ground and a touchdown and a very gruesome-looking, what I thought, injury until he came back like 3 minutes later. Pats now 8-3 on the season. Coach, let's open the conversation with you. How much of this win do you think was directly related to Rob Gronkowski's return to the lineup?
Well, having him back helps. And you look at the way they distributed the ball. He had the most targets. He had 7 targets. Being able to get the production that he had with the touchdown, but more what he opens up. And the fact that you've got to push so much coverage to dealing with him, that creates opportunities for everybody else. And the running game. I mean, they rushed for 215 yards yesterday.
Yes.
That's about as a big a factor of their success as anything. So he's unique in the sense that a lot of tight ends are one or the other. They can block or they can catch. Mm-hmm. He can do both. He can be at the point of attack. They can use him for pass protection. He gives them all of those things. Now, Patriots coming off a bye week, I would expect them to win and win handily like they did.
Yes, and what we were more concerned about was their struggling earlier in the game. Typically, they come out a little more buttoned up, but it just talks about some of the young talent that they have playing in key situations. Very, very sloppy first half. Jets were giving them a run for their money. The Jets also, in these divisional games, they know the Pats. So even though they've been dominated by the Pats, there's a sense of that, yes, we can play with these guys because we play them a couple of times a year. But I was surprised by the lack of continuity coming out of the bye that I saw in New England. I couldn't believe the number of penalties. I think they had 9 the first half, 9 penalties. I was shocked by that. But you could see that second half, they got back to what they want to do. And the thing I can say about New England is they have a theme to every game. And this is going to be how they're going to win games. When Sony Michel was out, we saw them struggle. When Gronk was out, we saw them struggle. So not only does Coach talk about those things very, very obvious as far as the passing game, but Rob Gronkowski is one of the best, if not the best, end-of-the-line blockers. So when you talk about that 200 yards, you have to realize this is not a great offensive line. They have good continuity. They work well together. But Gronk might be, besides their center, be their best offensive lineman. So now you get Sony Michel back. You see them starting to work in unison. You see them start to lean on people, exert their will against people. So the thing I take from this game was the Pats have a theme. And here late in November, they want to run the ball, play good red zone defense, not turn the ball over, and that's what they were able to accomplish in getting this win.
The concerning part for the Patriots, despite the 2-touchdown win, was coming off a bye against a bad team, but on the road, once again, they cannot get off to a fast start. This game's 13-13 late into the third quarter, which I don't know many people that expected the Pats coming off the bye. It was 13-13 despite that Gronk was playing and playing well, despite the fact that they were having success on the ground. But because they're the Patriots, they turned that game into a 2-touchdown win. From that moment forward, they dominated. The end of the third quarter and the fourth quarter, the Patriots' offense was clicking. They had 2 sustained touchdown drives. The Jets got nothing going. But they do need, more so than any Pats team of the last few years, I feel, all of their top flight weapons. We have seen them go to a Super Bowl without Edelman. We've seen them go to a Super Bowl without Gronk. We've seen them in the past just kind of have rotate a running back. I think they have to, in order to be able to compete at the highest level against teams that aren't the Jets, particularly on the road, they need Sony Michel healthy. We have seen he has been the key that has unlocked their offense this year. They need Gronk in there, even if he's a lesser Gronk, because teams still give him the respect the coach is talking about and what he does blocking. And they need Edelman as their consistent slot threat. We know Chris Hogan's going to get those passes where they do the fake double handoff and then he seems to always be coming open across the middle. Like, that's going to be there. But they need to be able to check all those boxes this year more so than in years past, in my eyes.
Well, coming off the bye week, you would expect them to be a little bit sharper than they were. But sometimes that happens where you're hoping for one thing and you anticipate one thing, but the lack of practice that you have during that off week does really affect you. And these games are historically close or have recently been really close. So the fact they won by 2 touchdowns, I think, is an indication of the work that they did do. Did it take a little longer than they hoped? Yeah, but it was still a bigger margin of victory than they've had lately.
But how do you explain the penalties then? It would seem like a very sloppy game, an undisciplined game, which is not characteristic of a Belichick team, regardless of whether they come off the bye or not.
Yeah, and look, that's going to be addressed, and it's going to be aggressively addressed because there's no place for penalties and for giving those away. But I do, with the way the byes work now and the amount of time that players get off, you can't do the same things that historically we did in New England. A lot of places we did where you get those extra practices and you're working on yourself and you're actually sharpening up a lot more. There's a lot more time off now than there has been historically.
And, Coach, sometimes when you're playing against a team that's playing very aggressive, a team that was with the Jets, who I thought these young kids, man, they were trying to win this football game at the beginning. So they kind of forced the Pats into with the tempo because they were playing a little bit faster than the Pats. The holding, also they were getting ready to blitz a couple times, illegal perceived false start penalties. So sometimes the opposition can force you into forcing you into turnovers or creating you into mistakes that you're not necessarily customary going to make. That's what I thought some of those mistakes were early.
And we've talked a lot on this show about some of these star rookies. The Quentin Nelson you mentioned, he might win Rookie of the Year as a guard. We've talked a ton about Baker, Saquon, Derwin James. Man, Sony Michel is an excellent football player. The Patriots saw something in him. I thought he was the second best running back on his own team last year at with Nick Chubb at Georgia. Mm-hmm. He has been outstanding. And he, if you look at where he plays, where he doesn't, it's so closely correlated to games where the Patriots score three-plus touchdowns in games where they don't. They obviously got four yesterday.
Well, it's nice to look at Cordarrelle Patterson's development, Josh Gordon's development, Sony mm-hmm. Michel's development. You get to about mid-season, and you start to see these jumps of guys that hadn't been in the system or have new roles in the system.
All right, Coach, stick around. Got to take a break. Coming up, is the Packers' disappointing season Aaron Rodgers' fault? That's next on First Things First. Aaron Rodgers trying to get the Packers into the playoff picture, taking on Kirk Cousins back here on First Things First. Vikings second quarter. Vikings trailing. Cousins finds Stephon Diggs, and we are tied at 14. We got a ball game. End of the third now, Cousins. This time to Adam Thielen for the touchdown. Vikings extend the lead 24-14. Less than 3 minutes to go. Green Bay Packers still down 10. Rodgers can't connect with Devontae Adams in the end zone. Packers lose this one 24-17. They fall to 4-6-1. The Vikings take the win. Here's Kirk Cousins on defeating Aaron Rodgers.
Well, last week left a bad taste in our mouths, and the chance to come back on Sunday Night Football against a division rival at home was a great opportunity, and I'm glad we made the most of it. It took, you know, a great team effort, a lot of people involved to make that happen, and I'm thrilled with the outcome.
Well, I mean, we are where we're at right now, record-wise. We're going to need some help from some teams. And then we got to take care of our own business. You know, we're going to have to find a way to win a game on the road. We're 0-6 on the road. So we just got to go back home, get some rest, beat Arizona, and then come back and beat Atlanta. And go to Chicago, a place we've won a number of times, beat them. Go to New York around Christmas, beat them. And come home against Detroit, beat them. Get a little help.
Get a little snark from Aaron Rodgers this season. Remember,
he's just going through the schedule.
That's like right from Coach Mangini's coaching, man. That's right. What he teaches the team. Didn't Coach come, Mangini.
And he came out a couple weeks ago and said, well, I'm going to have to be perfect in order for to win.
There's
a lot of, like,
he was right.
Mounting frustration out of Aaron Rodgers. Coach, who's to blame for the Packers' disappointing season if you take a step back?
There's a lot of areas that you could point to when you look at what's happened. They have had significant injuries even yesterday. They're playing a good Minnesota defense, a really good Minnesota defense.
Yes.
That blitzes, create disguises, has excellent personnel. They lose their left guard. They lose their left tackle. They're competitive throughout the whole game. I mean, there are things that easily could have changed that game. But over the course of the season, they wiped out the coaching staff before the start of the season. So they've made some of those changes, the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator. So we've adjusted that. They did some things in free agency. Yeah, remember, that was a big issue going in the season. Mm-hmm. Defensively, there's been some pluses there in terms of the pressure that they've gotten sack-wise. So I don't think this is a one-area problem. I think this is more of inconsistency across the board. And it's hard to point to one area and say, okay, this is the issue. Did Aaron Rodgers play his best yesterday?
No.
But there were other factors going into this that I think lent itself
to that. And Coach is so right. There's a wide variety of things, but when you have Aaron Rodgers, people are going to have tremendous expectations. I talked about earlier when we talked about this subject how I believe that the Packers, not knowing to them, they didn't judge the rest of the NFL how good these new rules, how the other quarterbacks would play. So how are you going to be able to adapt to that? Because you have Aaron Rodgers. You think that, oh, it'd be a natural bounce if these other quarterbacks are playing better than, say, the best quarterbacks in the league. We just haven't seen that from Aaron. I don't know if that's concrete stuff. Jenna came up with the most enlightening thing that I had heard about Green Bay outside.
Which in and of itself is enlightening.
No, it was amazing. It was an amazing comment saying, hey, Chris, all these new things, all these new gadgets, all these new ways of running offense, why don't the Packers do some of these new things? Because they look like the Packers were maybe 15, 16, 17. I was like, wow, I had never even thought about that, because you see other teams have added other
wrinkles
to them.
Other teams are evolving.
Yes.
Other teams are evolving, and the Packers offense, it looks like they're running the exact same offense with inferior personnel. And if you're doing the if everyone's evolving, you're running the same thing, but the people you're throwing the passes to are lesser players or younger players who have not yet developed, then these are the results you're going to get. This is the third straight year the Green Bay Packers have six losses by week 12. That's unacceptable. Now, last year, throw it out. Last year, I think they were 4-1.
Right.
Rodgers breaks his collarbone. But that means the last 2 years he's been healthy, they've been either 5-6 or 4-6-1 at this point of the season. Now, when it happened 2 years ago, he said we got to run the table, and they did run the table. He just laid out here the process for them to run the table. The problem is, even if, as he said it, even if they run the table, that because of that tie, they don't get to 10 wins. Like, they still probably need some help. This team can't win on the road. Is six straight losses on the road. Rodgers saw this coming when he laid out the schedule before the bye, or right after the bye, saying what they have coming up. And, yes, he's got to take some ownership of this. Mike McCarthy's probably going to get fired, and I think it'll be smart for them to move on. But one of the things that I'm seeing with Rodgers, and I don't know if you're seeing as well, Coach, is he, this year more than any other year, seems to be struggling taking the easy throw. There are a lot of plays where he is taking shots like he famously takes on the free play, but it's third and four. Like, it's one thing to take a shot on second and short because you know you have the third down coming, or on those free plays. But if you can pick up an easy first down, it's one of the things that I will give Brady credit for. I don't think he gets enough credit for, which is he almost never sacrifices the good searching for the great. Like, good will be good enough. Let's just keep the chains moving.
Yes.
Rodgers seems to repeatedly this year in big spots be trying to make huge plays when they don't need it.
I had one of our great quarterback coaches and offense coordinator, Tom Moore. He said, you never go broke taking a profit. So that's the thing that Tom Brady sees that. With throwing to the flats, knowing I'm going to put an athlete in space, the overall continuity and what it does to the defense over the course of the game compared to I'm going to take a little more risky and go down the field. So that's what you typically see from Tom Brady compared to Aaron.
The only thing I'll say in terms of the innovation is when Peyton Manning was running his system, they ran his system. They consistently ran it, and there wasn't a lot of change to what they did. With Tom's system in New England, they ran that system, and then there's been some tweaks here and there, and maybe they run the ball more, but it's essentially the core system. So I don't know if it's purely a function of innovation that has hurt Green Bay's offense. And there's been other great quarterbacks that you can look at on teams that you could argue underachieve. I mean, look at New Orleans. Over the course of time, they've had a fantastic quarterback.
They've had a fantastic offense.
They've won one Super Bowl. They stayed with the head coach.
But we blame it on the defense. We blame it on the defense every year in New Orleans.
And in New Orleans, that was fair to blame it. They had a four-year stretch where they were 30th, 31st, or 32nd in defense every year. Like, at least with New Orleans.
Yeah, but when you're the head coach, you're the head coach of the whole team.
Oh, okay. I get it.
It's not like, I'm not involved with this draft. I don't know who's on defense. I'm just going to work over here. You guys do your thing.
Sure.
That's fair.
You know, and I think in this situation, the snarkiness, does that help? No, it doesn't help. That to me needs to go away, and they need to focus on the next group of games, starting with the first game. And look, at the end of this, they may be back in the hunt.
CeCe, how much do you trust this Vikings team now moving forward?
This is the thing with the Vikings. The Vikings have improved their quarterback play. The Vikings are a throwing team with a weak offensive line. Now, the question is either team or defense. Do I trust the defense? I trust that Mike Zimmer was going to get this defense playing better and playing to a level that we've expected through the years. So I do trust them. They got a very, very tough schedule. I think they got a better roster than Green Bay. So can they run the ball? Can they keep Dalvin Cook? Because when Dalvin Cook, when him and Stephon Diggs are healthy, more importantly, Dalvin Cook, man, they have that, being able to be able to change the offense with some type of running game. But you can't be one-dimensional in this NFL. So if they're not going to be one-dimensional and they're going to be able to run the ball, I believe their defense is going to be back. Yes, I would trust them.
I feel like when we look at the Vikings and we think about Kirk Cousins, we're all sitting there thinking and waiting to figure out whether or not he's going to be consistently the guy they hope he'll be. Where when you look at a guy like Aaron Rodgers, you know who Aaron Rodgers is. You know that every single game he has the potential to not just be good, but to be great. With Kirk Cousins, you're trying to figure out what is he going to be over the long term. That's
Cousins,
what I'm still not sure
of. The similar knock that we had on Cam last year, which I know the up and down. Like, now his ups since 2015, He's got more 300-yard, three touchdown, zero pick games than anybody in football. Like, so he has a lot of really high-level games. But he also has the games you're talking about.
Yeah,
like,
Drew Brees is the only one to have more.
Correct. Oh, good note. See, my apologies.
Yeah,
second only to Drew Brees.
He always gives these notes when the Purdue guy's on there.
Oh, yeah.
He always does that. Great facts, yeah.
You're
there's only a few to have the Purdue Boilermakers in there, but yes.
So Cousins has the ability to have those superstar games, and he had one of them yesterday. I thought he was great yesterday. But you're right about the consistency point. For Minnesota had to get this win. Their next two are on the road in New England and Seattle. Now, they come out of that stretch 2-0. Then you start talking about them as more than can they sneak into the playoffs. Start talking about them, can they upset some teams in the playoffs? Could they maybe catch the Bears? But these next, they had to get this win first to really put Green Bay to bed and put themselves in position.
All right, we got to take a break. Coach, we'll see you a little bit later on. Coming up, did the Panthers, we're talking about Cam, did they blow their shot at the playoffs with a loss to Seattle? That's next on First Things First. All right, it's a tight one in the Seahawks-Panthers game. Graham Gano setting up for the 52-yard field goal to give the Panthers the late lead, and he misses it, probably because I started him last night on my fantasy team. Game still tied at 27. One of many missed opportunities for Carolina. Over a minute to go, Russell Wilson finds Tyler Lockett, takes it down to the 10. That would set up a Sebastian Janikowski 31-yard field goal, and he doesn't miss. Seahawks win and improve to 6-5. Here's the head coach, Pete Carroll, after the win.
Yeah, we got a long ways to go. You know, we're alive, but we got a long ways to go. We're really happy going home. Get to play at home next week, and it seems like we've been away for so long. But just one game. We're already in the playoffs as far as we're concerned. We got to win every game, and we got to do it one game at a time.
You know, we just got to, you know, look ourselves in the mirror, understand what we aren't, and fix it.
All right, Nick, what went wrong for the Panthers yesterday? Let's start there.
Well, I mean, we said on Friday the X factor could be Graham Gano. Graham Gano misses a field goal after they lost the game the previous week. Everyone focused on the two-point conversion, but they lost because of Graham Gano. A week ago this week, he had a chance to redeem himself, couldn't. But where they really lost this game was in the red zone. First drive of the game, inside the 5, turnover on downs. Second drive of the game, inside the 5, settle for a field goal.
Let me stop you there. When you're playing a team that's making that long journey, it becomes very important. Seattle, very, very average since Pete Carroll's been there on the road. On the East Coast, even worse than that.
1 p.m. start, too, so everything's in their face.
So you talking about not being able to finish out those drives. Imagine early in the game you're in Carolina coming from Seattle and you're down 14-0. They don't have the type of offense going to be able to do that. They're going to be impatient. It's going to take them out running game, which they're number one in the NFL. So I just wanted to interject that because that was a huge storyline to allowing Seattle to get back in this game and ultimately winning it late.
So the first two drives inside the 5, they come away with 3 points. Fourth drive of the game inside the 10, settle for a field goal. Fifth drive of the game inside the 20, Cam makes his worst play of the day, throws a pick in the end zone. Completed 14 of 14 passes in the first half. Had a good game, but that one play was a killer. And then late in the game, when the Panthers are driving for what could have been their game-winning field goal, an enormous tackle by Flowers on a pitch out to, I think, Christian McCaffrey. Instead of getting a first down and the Panthers being able to kick a field goal at the gun, they have to kick a 50-yarder where they miss it. Seattle's set up. So everything went wrong for them. And this is now that Steelers game. Steelers beat the brakes off them on Thursday night. Then they lost a game they shouldn't have against Detroit, lost a game they shouldn't have against Seattle, and now all of a sudden they're the 8 seed in the NFC after being 6-2. They are behind a team just to be the next team into the playoffs. Like this, and let's not forget Carolina. Two left against New Orleans. Disastrous last 7 days for the Carolina Panthers that changed the trajectory of their season.
Yeah, and that bad start, it's hard for them to recover, giving up big plays late in games down the field. Typically, their defense is not going to do that. We know their front 7 is going to always be very, very tough. They're going to be hard to be able to run the ball against, but their inability to be able to get off the field on third down and their inability to not give up those big plays late in games, that's what hurt Carolina.
And Seattle, Seattle, by the way, 4 of their last 5 at home, and they have 3 games against San Francisco and Arizona. So they are positioned well despite having 2 tough home games against the Vikings and the Chiefs. But I want to give Russell Wilson credit, man. This guy, we always add yeah buts with him. Yeah, but they had a great defense. Now it's yeah, but they have a great running game. At every point in his career, when they have been faced with games where, you know what, the defense isn't playing well, or in this game, the running game isn't showing up, we need you to go throw for 250, 300 yards, he can do it. He now sits there today as one of only two quarterbacks in NFL history with a passer rating for his career north of 100. It is Aaron Rodgers 1, Russell Wilson 2, and that is the list. Since they started 0-2, since week 2, he's thrown 20 touchdowns, 2 picks, and has a 118 rating. He has been excellent. Needed it yesterday without Doug Baldwin having a great game.
You got two teams both going in very different directions, but both with the same record, 6-5. Which team do you trust more, C?
One coach always taught me, great Denny Green, said, Chris, it's a matter of when you get your wins and when you get your losses. You much rather get those losses earlier in the year because it's about momentum, especially late in the year. You much rather be Seattle based on where they're where they've trended from as far as earlier in the year. Now to being a dominant run team, Seattle, they had over the years we talked about the least amount of collateral they spent on the offensive linemen. Talked about the lack of being physical and Russell Wilson running for his life. Those things are not happening anymore. Best running game, Russell Wilson running less than ever before. Russell Wilson, a complete pocket passer who can ad-lib if you force him. Much rather be Seattle.
And we knew that Seattle needed to get to this moment of their season. We knew that, especially once Jimmy G went down. You got the Niners twice and the Cardinals, if you can be alive at this point. Carolina, on the other hand, Carolina's got to be rooting for the Rams to lose and the Saints to keep winning. Because if Week 17 is in New Orleans, which it is, and New Orleans has the one seed on the line, and Carolina needs a win to get to the playoffs, they're cooked. So, again, the Steelers' loss is one thing. What's happened to Carolina in the last 8 days took them from a team that was a fringe contender to a team that's now a fringe playoff team. That shouldn't happen.
I didn't think it was possible for Cam to have a quarterback rating of 110 and to be 25 of 30. One pick and them lose a game.
Yeah,
I mean, as good as they play defense and the other things they do well, I didn't think that that stat line was possible for them to lose.
With McCaffrey having 17 for a buck 25 on the ground, they ran the ball for 220. Cam only made one mistake. They lose the game.
All right, we've got to take a break. Coming up, talking the Pats. Is the road to the Super Bowl once again going to go through Foxborough? We'll talk about that next on First Things First. We are going viral. So over the summer, the Bills posted a video of Josh Allen at minicamp to which Spicy Math, Jalen Ramsey tweeted, quote, that's a pick waiting to happen. So Ramsey didn't let up during the game yesterday, you know, because they played the Bills and all, yelling, you trash, to the Bills sideline. But Buffalo got the last trashy laugh after getting the win. They sent out, this tweet didn't age well, back at Ramsey.
See? Your thoughts?
What do you make of it all? Spazzy.
What? Look at the stand. Just looking at this.
What's Jacksonville's record, C?
How many wins they got?
They got three.
Can't be more than three.
Mm. What did they start out? 3-1, right?
They are 3-8. They've lost how many
seven
in a row?
Seven. Yeah. So now we back to the old Jacksonville. Only time they make the show is when they do something stupid.
Oh, wait. What's the Bills' record? They're in better shape.
4-7. What a
debacle. Oh, spicy mouth. I hate that. Today's just going to be the day to be like, I told you so.
Why not?
Today's going to be the day.
Didn't
I tell you
Harbaugh
that spicy mouth would hurt an NFL team, Nick? Oh, I love it. Oh, I love
Think
a spicy mouth.
Think about how
mouth.
Much things have changed.
Oh, I love a spicy mouth. Well, get a minute, spicy
two
mouth.
Weeks into
Shut
the,
up.
2 weeks into the year, Jacksonville's 2-0. The Bills are so bad, guys are quitting at halftime. Since then, the Bills have won more games.
I tell you that guy's a freshman.
Gillette Clear Gel sponsoring today. Ohio State destroyed Michigan. Another I Told You So by CC 62.
Oh, did I tell you the guy that blocked the punt? A freshman?
Buckeyes quarterback Dwayne Haskins threw for nearly 400 yards, 6 touchdown passes. Jim Harbaugh remains winless in his 4 games against Ohio State.
Oh, the quarterback's a sophomore.
See, you told him so. What was the key to OSU's route?
Oh, I'm just going to go with that highlight, right? Paris Campbell. They don't even have anybody on their team like Paris Campbell. Also, Jim Harbaugh, as much as he is quarterback guru, he don't have a good quarterback on his roster. Hadn't had one since he's been there. He's taken every transfer in the United States, and none of them are successful. Their defense is on par with great Michigan teams before. But Jim Harbaugh, you need to give yourself a dose of reality. Freshen up your offense a little bit, bub. Freshen up.
Bub. Dropped a bub on him?
Yeah, that's what
you
my,
are
that's
feeling
what,
yourself
That's what my
this
wife
morning.
Says all the time.
Bub?
Yes.
Oh, right after she done cursing you out, she
no,
adds
no,
a little
it's
bub
a, no, no,
oh,
she's like,
it's a
yeah,
loving one?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. This is all you need to know. Urban Meyer has as many wins against Michigan as he has regular season losses at Ohio State.
Wow.
That's the domination since Urban has taken over. And really, this series, they've only, Michigan's only
won. Hey, can you do me a favor? Tally up the last 4 years, because I'm trying to figure out how many wins the senior class had this year. How many?
Oh, right now?
Those guys graduating right now. They beat Michigan 46. Four times in a row.
The answer is 46.
46
wins. The senior class is 46-6.
Mm. Okay.
Pretty good.
Not bad.
Good. No.
Congrats. On to the NFL, where Philip Rivers had quite a day, a career day, in fact. Versus the Cardinals, he completed his first 25 passes. Boy, that's an NFL record-breaking day. And finished the day 28 of 29 as the Chargers routed Arizona. CC, Philip Rivers, what'd you make of his performance yesterday?
Outstanding. It's nice to see that we're going to start getting some of the publicity that Philip Rivers deserves. We don't talk about him enough. Man, what an accomplishment. You got to be better than lucky. The wide receiver's making great adjustments, making tremendous plays, him spreading the ball around to a variety of receivers. Also, man, they're creative in what they do. They're hard to defend. But Philip Rivers, I believe, one of the most underrated passers ever, outside of Dan Marino, best quarterback not to take his team to a Super Bowl.
Not to win a Super Bowl. See, and Rivers never even been there, obviously. I thought of you when I was watching this game, because not just because it was your birthday, but because early in the year, we were watching a Chiefs game together, and they were blowing the opponent out. Mm-hmm. And you said, all right, this dangerous time now. Got to make sure you come out of this game healthy. You can't leave it with a sour taste in your mouth.
Right.
Chargers fell down 10-0, scored 45 straight. But they left the game with a sour taste because Melvin Gordon, their star running back, second-degree MCL sprain, according to NFL Network, he's going to be out about a month. So it's not a disaster, but it ain't great. He's going to be having a knee brace when he comes back, most likely. So as great as Rivers was, that they didn't leave that game unscathed.
All right, moving on to the Colts. They won on a game-winning field goal to beat the Dolphins 27-24. Andrew Luck threw for 343 yards and three touchdowns. Nick, how dangerous is this Colts team?
Listen, I think they're going to win their division. I think they're going to go from 1-5 to division champs. I think they're going to catch the Texans. And with the offensive line, which actually allowed a sack yesterday for the first time since week 5, playing the
Amazing.
Way it is, they're never out of the game. Like, the Colts and the Seahawks are the two teams in the league that, to me, right now, even if they're down 10 going into a fourth quarter, I have so much faith in that their quarterbacks are going to run things right that I think they're fine. And they did it again yesterday. Luck looks, right now, as good as he's looked at any point in his career.
Well, you mentioned Wright, but let's talk about Frank Wright, the coach. Jenna mentioned, why don't we talk about him and the job he's done with Andrew Luck coming back? Because anytime you can make an impact on a starting quarterback, let alone one guy who's supposed to be one of the great ones, tremendous. They got it right as far as a head coach, winning 5 games in a row, and also they've changed their identity. They are a physical football team now.
Yep.
All right, to the NFC East now. The Eagles got a win over their division foe Giants. Jake Elliott kicked a game winner as time expired. After the game, Odell Beckham said, quote, attacking Eagles secondary wasn't in our game plan, but, and this is me saying this, perhaps should have been against a very banged up Eagles secondary. See, what'd you make of the Eagles win over the Giants?
Well, first, Odell's comments, they're not right as far as him saying it. Not that he shouldn't say them, but if you look at the game, I watched the game. The Giants got out to a huge lead in this game. They were out playing. They were out scheming. They were out coaching the Philadelphia Eagles, the defending Super Bowl champs. So whatever they were doing in the game, it was working. So for him to just try to reflect on himself, and he shouldn't do that. He's having a very good year. He went over 1,000 yards, but the comments after the game, they're just not necessary. You're up 16-0. I think they were up 22-3. Also,
they were up 16-0, and then it was, I think, at one point 19-3.
And at that point in the NFL game, you're not supposed to lose that game. So him injecting himself into the conversation, that wasn't the reason why the Giants lost this game. So that's not something that I want to see. This Eagles team, though, man, they are only a shell of themselves. Like, we keep waiting out hope. Oh, we keep waiting out hope, but they're just not a good football team. They are not good defensively. They cannot put the type of pressure. They don't have great linebacker play. We know their secondary is just ravaged by injuries. They're not very, very good either. This Eagles team, I just keep getting surprised every week the amount of hope that I say, it's going to happen, and they still a dud even in a win here.
I get that the Eagles now one game out of first in their division, save their season. Man, the Giants thoroughly outplayed them and did everything they could to lose that game, and the Eagles finally obliged them. From in the first half, the Giants going for two on an early touchdown when they didn't need to, when they had control of the football game, all of a sudden, late in the game, the Eagles and Giants both have two touchdowns and two field goals. Yet the Giants somehow out of that have gotten 19 points, and the Eagles have gotten 22 points. They gave them on two-point conversions and missed two-point conversions, a free 3 points. Eli's interception at the end of the first half was egregious.
Yeah,
it was
hurt.
Points off the board. You could see it coming. He didn't need to take that shot.
To air out of the team.
Absolutely. And one thing Odell didn't mention, at least not in those comments, but I understand the frustration on it, he got held twice.
He should have ran a better route.
Should have run a better.
I'm going to tell you why. Because he had a skinny post on. And what he did, he started indicating, he started bending his post in, and the DB started pressing him down. So then when the DB went to go for the ball, he tugged him in the back. All Odell had to do was straighten him up. If he would have straightened him up and pushed off of him, the ref would have seen the separation. Like, you can't allow the DB to smudge you into the formation. So, yeah, he might have got tugged, but he could have ran a lot better route to be able to get himself open on that.
So, but that ended up being a huge swing because then the field goal for the Giants puts them, ties the game instead of putting them up four, which then allows obviously an Eagles field goal to win it at the end. But this is, I didn't understand what the Giants were doing. I didn't understand why Saquon didn't get more touches in the second half. He looked, nobody can bring him down on first contact.
Yes.
I mean, he's just bouncing off people. So Philly got the win, but the way they got the win playing the way they played all year, which is mediocre football. Like the Giants, losing games like this is why there's only three teams in the league with a worse record than the Giants. Because games that they should win, games that yesterday looked like they had more talent, they were not able to win. It could have been a three-score halftime lead instead of a one-score halftime lead. It was a killer.
Barkley's special, and they should have gotten him the ball. And to have Odell complaining afterwards, it looks like, potentially could be a little bit jealous of the rookie that he's getting the limelight from.
Interesting.
Just something I observed.
Something to watch. Moving on, the Patriots coming off their bye week, taking on the other New York team, the Jets. This game perhaps a little closer than the Pats would have wanted still. They get the win 27-13. Tom Brady, 300 yards, two touchdowns, and, he broke the record for most total passing yards. No big whoop. Gronk was back in the lineup, had his first touchdown since week one, but, boy, do they miss Sony Michel when he's not in there. Added over 130 yards on the ground and a touchdown. Patriots are now 8-3. So, CC, are the Pats looking like the Pats again now that Gronk is back?
Well, New England never looks like any other team that you've ever seen. Not, I'm talking about, forget the NFL, I'm talking about any of their other teams in the past, because what they do is they try to develop who they have on the roster and, like, what their health is, what their total capacity to be able to affect the offense. So this doesn't look any. They never had a Cordell Patterson before. They never had to be worrying about their running backs before. So how they evolve as a team, every year, it's brand new. But the NFL, Pittsburgh Steelers, man, if you allow them to get in that one or two seed, it's going to be problems. They are the standard in the NFL. If you want to be able to beat them, your best chance is to do it early in the season and do it on the road in the playoffs. So if not, right now they're sitting at the number two seed. They have a win over Kansas City in the head-to-head. They're one game back from Kansas City if they slip up. Not the best New England team, but positioning itself as we start rolling late in November to be a number one, number two seed at the worst. This is not what you want to see, but having Gronk back as the end of the line blocker, having him back, the defenses, they fear him more than any other weapon that they have on the offense outside of Sony Michel. So those combinations, you can see the Pats rounding in the form to what type of team they want to be in the playoffs.
New England all year long has been a bad road team. And to me, that continued yesterday, particularly how they're starting off on the road. I know they won 27-13 if you weren't watching this game.
It was close.
It's 13-13 late in the fourth quarter. So, I mean, go through New England's road game. At Jacksonville, at Detroit to start the year, bad to start, bad to finish in that game. At Chicago, they needed two special team scores to get going in that game. At Buffalo, that game's super close until midway through the third quarter. At Tennessee, they bad start, bad finish. And then this week, bad start, they finished it well. So, the Pats, it's never been more important than this year for the New England to get one of those top two seeds. And the Steelers did them a favor yesterday. Kansas City might have done them a favor a week ago. We'll see if New England can stay at that two line, maybe get to the one line, or if Pittsburgh can catch them. But where they are right now, there have been so many New England teams in the past that if they were missing a key player, it felt like, oh, they'll make do. I feel like they need all of their guys that they had this week. Gronk, Sony Michel, who was back and played outstanding, and Julian Edelman. They've only played two games all year with all three of those guys playing. The Chiefs game where they scored 40, 43, and yesterday's game where they scored 30 or 28. Like, they are more reliant on having their full complement of weapons than in years past because Brady's not quite as sharp, the offensive line isn't quite as sharp, and they don't have as dynamic of an advantage in the passing game as they have in years past, as everyone seems to be putting up these monster numbers.
No one's talking about it, but you're right. Brady isn't that sharp, and he has been pressing a lot, and he hasn't had great games. He hasn't come out of a game where you're like, Brady was lights out. He didn't need anything. He went out there and won the game the way we sometimes say with Aaron Rodgers, but we'll talk more about that coming up. On the other side, why is Baker taking shots at Hugh Jackson? Next on First Things First. Friday on Fox, the Pac-12 champion will be crowned as number 17. Utah battles number 16 Washington on Saturday. 10th-ranked Ohio State and number 19 Northwestern go toe-to-toe for the Big Ten title. Coverage begins at 7 Eastern Friday and Saturday on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Coach, I just got my invite. Urban Meyer, I'm speaking at the captain's dinner on Friday night, walking around town with the team on Saturday, going to be on the sideline for the kickoff.
Nice. That's exciting.
I mean, that's pretty normal.
Back here with Coach Mangini, Baker in the crowd, taking down the Bengals under the first. Baker finds Antonio Callaway for the score. Later in the half, more Baker finds David Njoku somehow.
This is
some way.
Get in there.
Trust me, he's getting in the end zone. Right before the two-minute warning, Nick Chubb gets in on the act, makes a great grab to put the Browns up 28. What a day for Baker Mayfield. Browns win 35-20. Watch this. Baker runs into Hugh Jackson after the game. No longer best friends, these two. Here's Baker on the icy exchange.
He said, good job, good game. Yeah, that was brief. I didn't feel like talking.
You or him?
Me.
Why not?
I don't know. Left Cleveland, goes down to Cincinnati. I don't know. It's just somebody that was in our locker room asking for us to play for him and then goes to a different team. We play twice a year. Everybody can have their spin on it, but that's how I feel. No, what it comes down to is we still have the same players. That's what I said when everything was happening. We just had to play better. You know what? You can put your own spin on it, but we have the same players. Yeah, we have people that we believe in calling the plays now.
Okay, Hugh Jackson was actually fired. He didn't just leave and was like, I'm going to go play and coach with the Bengals against you guys. So
well, he did choose where to take his next job. That's what Baker's talking about.
He had a ton of options. I'm not taking sides. I'm just, anyway, regardless, Coach, what'd you make of, do you want to say something, C, before we move on to how Baker played yesterday?
Coach, know how I feel. If you decide to go and do it, you're on your own. We all been in this position. We all have relationships. His decision wasn't wrong to be able to go to and with Marvin Lewis, who's a very, very good friend of his. And from an African-American standpoint, man, the head coaches, white coaches, when they get fired, they go on to be coordinators again. African-American coaches, they either out the league or they position coaches. So Hugh Jackson is doing what he's got to be able to do. Now, he made a mistake by going across the field after the game. That was stupid. And then expecting another player to be able to greet him that type of way, because now you're at the mercy of whatever the emotion is. He could have gone to the locker room, but I understand Baker in his initial response. It's about Cleveland, and if you're not helping us, you're helping the opposition, then you can't be for me.
Well, you look at it, the idea that he left, he was fired. He was fired.
Yes.
And then he had an opportunity to go with a good friend to be able to contribute in a meaningful way, which is something that he wanted to do. And who knows what the future holds for Cincinnati. If Marvin moves on, is maybe he part of the succession plan? Who knows what they've talked about? And to be mad at him for doing that, look, Baker will learn that the league has a way of humbling you. and he'll understand that at some point, maybe the decision that he has will be limited to one or two spots. And it's not like that Hugh walks out and goes, oh, I've got my pick of all these 31 other teams. This is where I'm going to go. And to take shots at the guy after you win the game, why? Why?
Okay, so I'll tell you why, even though I totally agree that Listen, Hugh Jackson, if he wants to work, I don't think there were 30 teams. I don't know if there were three teams offering him a job like Cincinnati was immediately. So I don't blame Hugh at all. He got fired. He could have just collected his money. Instead, he wanted to go work. So good for him for that. Now, I still think he's collecting his money. My guess is he's working for almost free in Cincinnati. But regardless, the why is, I mean, Baker Mayfield, since he's been drafted, has been acting as if he's been a Cleveland Brown for 20 years. He has been Cleveland Browns from the socks up. And I think he's trying to, and I think it's being successful, generate a sense of loyalty and trust amongst his teammates and amongst those fans. He's trying to even further get the people of Cleveland and his teammates to buy into, I am the unquestioned leader. You know what? If you're not with us, you're against us. Don't care that you used to be the coach of this team. I ain't with you anymore. Like, I think that's the why. Now, maybe it's silly. Maybe you will be humbled, whatever. But I don't think it was I don't think he did this flippantly. I think he knew what he was doing, and I think that's why he gave those pointed comments afterwards. I think he's talking to his teammates. I think he's talking to the fans of Cleveland saying, I've got this. Especially now that Hugh's gone, I'm the face of this football team, the leader of this football team. The past is the past. I think that's why he did it.
Well, I'm just going to tell you, I know being in the NFL is hard. The only thing probably harder is manning that mic on a regular basis. So there's a lot of times afterwards I was like, man, I wish I would have changed that up just a little bit. Like, I wish that I was the face of the franchise or responded. That's very, very hard to do. And the emotion, look what he's been through being the first pick. All right? He came from nowhere to be the first pick. He's taken over this franchise. And not only did they fire the offense coordinator, fired the head coach halfway through the season. Like, this is not what he is used to. So trying to get used to being the spokesperson for a franchise, we're going to have a lot of trial and error. I'm not going to pick him apart for the press conference because I know in 5 years, Baker's going to wish he had responded different, a lot like Coach said.
Yeah, so he walks across the field and you're not going to be gracious in that moment. Okay. But then you're going to follow it up with shots at the podium of we have the same players. You figure it out. Now we've got a play caller that we believe in. And this is more malicious than it is an emotional reaction to me. And you can say what you want about Hugh, but he helped make Baker Mayfield the number one draft pick. He was working hard to try to make Baker Mayfield successful. It's not like he went into this saying, let me see how I can keep this kid down. It was in his interest to help him be as successful as possible. I just maybe it's a young guy who needs to learn how to be a little bit more gracious in winning than he was.
Coach, maybe in this, maybe because the pollution that was going on between Todd Haley and what Baker witnessed, where they were trying to groom him as ultimately the franchise quarterback. All this kind of going behind each other's back, even with Todd Haley coming to work thinking, I'm going to be the next head coach, and them going with Freddie Kitchens. I think that could maybe distort your opinion when you're in those rooms, in those meetings. You know, sometimes it's not what it appears to be behind the scenes. That might also have a little bite to his comments also.
Yeah, and look, you're absolutely right. There could be a bunch of stuff that went on that we don't know about. I just think at the end of the day, when you have a chance in victory to be gracious, it's never a bad thing, and people aren't going to look at you and say, wow, I wonder why you did that. I wonder why
and
you
did that. And that's something that we learned. Moment.
All right,
well, let's take this conversation to what he did on the field. What about the afternoon that Baker Mayfield had against this Cincinnati team?
Listen, I'll be early to the party again, Coach. Baker's a star. He's going to be a star.
He's number one pick for a reason.
No. Don't do that.
He can stay at your house until we let him in.
I'm not. The Hall of Fame thing, I never say. But is Baker Mayfield going to prove himself worthy of the number one pick of the draft? Yes. Did the Browns get it right? Yes. Right now, is he the biggest reason that a team that won one game in the previous 2 years already has four wins this year? Yes. Like, are we seeing a week-by-week progression of him that is greater than what we're seeing from any of the other rookie quarterbacks? Yes. I can say that confidently right now, 10 games into or less than that, into his NFL career.
Well, did he play a struggling Atlanta Falcons defense? Yes. Did he play a struggling Cincinnati Bengals defense?
Yes.
That barely pressured them all. Did David Njoku get carried 3 yards into the end zone? Did Nick Chubb catch a ball over some guy's head? You know, that's going to happen all the time. You know, did he get the ball on the 10-yard line and throw a 10-yard completion to Darren Fells, who was wide open? Yes. I mean, yeah, Star.
Yeah. Coach is Star. Trying to be sarcastic, but one thing.
You're kidding.
Yeah. But one thing Coach has been impressed with Cleveland has been how Freddie Kitchens has taken over and what he's doing different as far as getting the ball out of Baker's hands. They're running the ball. And you thought from the beginning that he as a coordinator would do well with Baker. You weren't worried as far as Todd leaving the building as much because you thought he was going to be in decent hands.
Nah, you know, I was a little worried. I didn't know how this was going to work out with Freddie. And I do think that if this was happening all the time between Hugh and Todd and Baker was the one who was being affected by it, okay, I totally understand why they went the way that they went. But I wasn't sure on Kitchen.
Okay.
All right, Coach, stick around. Coming
I thought
up,
he was one of your old buddies.
And the Steelers
taking
the AFC after blowing the game to Case Keenum.
I put that one by the rim. I had to go up and get that myself.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.